Have you ever heard of bunny chow or cook sisters? Babuiti, chicken tikka, these are all dishes that shaped my world as a child just because of migration. Come with me, Erica von Kaschke, as we pass the cinnamon stick to people who have come to Australia, listen to their migration stories, to what they bring to the land down under and what they get from it. Welcome to the Cinnamon Stick. My name is Erica von Kaschke, and today I've got Rika Asauka with me from Language and Culture. Rika, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I'm a bit nervous talking.
I wish you could all see Rika. She's such a lovely person that I wish this was actually on video, but I think she might be more nervous then. So, Rika, where did you grow up?
Oh, in Japan. But I left Japan when I was 24 years old.
Where in Japan are you from?
Near Tokyo, about 25 kilometers away from Tokyo.
What does it look like in that area?
It's still a commuting area. And it's called, the little town that I used to live, it's called Chigasaki. And to Tokyo, it takes about like 2 hours to get to by train. And I remember I used to spend 2 hours to get to work every morning.
I think that's something that people in Perth can't really relate to.
Cannot even imagine, yes.
Which flavor do you associate with happiness during your growing up years?
Growing up years, I have to say it's miso soup. So you know the Japanese soup with the soybean based paste?
Yeah.
That's the one. It has to be. Because here, normally people have it for lunch or dinner or whatever. But that was the first thing we have in the morning. So every breakfast, we had that soup. And then, you know, steaming hot.
Yes.
Even during the summer, with the rice, that was the breakfast. Miso soup.
So what's really good about miso soup? What are the benefits of having that for breakfast, for instance?
Yeah, to start with, very nutritious because it's made from fermented soybean paste. Yeah, rich in protein. But the thing is, it's the warmth. You know, you get up and then it's the first bowl of warm soup. Yeah, it's nice. You know, just before going to school. And then mom is there and then you can actually smell in the morning.
So, but I think especially in winter, it must have been
nice.
It's
good.
It's so cold in Japan and then the miso soup. What would you say is the best thing about Japanese culture from your point of view?
Because I've been away for so many years, I think I notice more when I go back to Japan now that how strong their desire is in details and in balance. You know, having everything in balance.
Yeah.
It's quite interesting, like the gardens and everything. They just try to achieve that perfect balance in everything. So I think that is something that speaks to me really strong.
Yeah.
Keeping the balance of things.
Yeah, and being kind of living in harmony with the space around you and also the food and
you know,
really taking care in how you live.
Yeah, like now you talk about the food, so like the presentation. So on the plate, there is this food and also the empty space on the plate.
Yeah.
And then it has to be in the balance, the negative space and the positive space.
So how do you think that has influenced the way you live?
I try to keep my balance. But it's quite funny, when I was young I didn't really care about those things, but then coming to my age, I mean my 50s, and I started to see this balancing things like business and then the calmness and then loudness, and then I feel that having that balance within myself is so important.
Because obviously you work with intercultural relations, you're training people up. And I guess that is an important aspect as well of how you are with other people, keeping that balance.
Yeah, so true, so true. So it's not like this is right or that is wrong, but it's sort of like making sure that I'm staying in the neutral area somewhere. I can see both end of the story, both sides, and then balance it and then see what is the beauty in that balance.
One of the most trendy things of Japan over the last few years have been wabi-sabi. You know, going that the
perfection in the imperfection, you know.
That's right. Yeah, perfection and imperfection. It's quite funny. I do pottery.
Yes.
And then in Japan, you know, maybe you know of like tea ceremony.
Yes.
So teacups. Teacups, those teacups which claim a lot of money, the expensive teacups sometimes have that fingerprint of the potter.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And then it is, and then they don't erase it. They don't delete that fingerprint. And then they leave it there for that imperfection to create the perfect teacup.
Wow. And it's almost like putting something of yourself, really giving something of yourself to somebody else when they buy that. You really almost buy the humanity in the cup.
Yeah, yeah. And then because sometimes people think something perfect cup, of course you will not imagine having the fingerprint on your teacup, isn't it?
Yes.
But it is the different way of looking at it by having that touch of the potter. Tea ceremony is not something that, normally in general that the Japanese people grow up with, but it is something that it's around in our everyday life also at the same time. But the ceremony itself is, I must admit, I don't have a very good personal experience because you have to sit on the floor, tatami floor, and I attended twice and I didn't really enjoy because my feet went just totally numb. Yes. And I couldn't stand up after that tea ceremony. So I didn't really enjoy it. But the concept of the tea ceremony, I really like it too. Yeah.
How did you and your family come to Australia?
Maybe I need to tell you first that I used to teach Japanese as a second language in 1980s. Japanese was really popular in Australia. So that was the first time I actually came to Australia, to Adelaide, South Australia, by myself. I was single still. So that was in 1986.
So you came to teach Japanese as a second language.
Yes.
And what was your first memory of arriving in Australia that very first time?
I arrived in end of December.
Oh my goodness.
And it was just so hot. That was my first impression. And then in South Australia, it's really bad. The wind, the hot, dry wind come through from the inner state. So it was so hot, and I remember I lived in the college, the dormitory. And of course, I came from Japan. In Japan, when it's hot, we open the windows to let the wind come through. And I did that, and that was the horrible mistake. So all the heat stayed in my dormitory room. And then of course, it's the brick made from brick, the building. So it just stayed in my bedroom for like weeks. I felt like I was in the oven. It was so hot.
So then how come you stayed in Australia? Like, what took us through that journey?
So I was fortunate enough to get a job to teach Japanese as a second language at universities. So that was I was doing. And while I was teaching, I also did a degrees. And then when I finished, I moved to Southeast Asia, looking for more opportunity, maybe. But then it was quite an interesting move. I actually moved to Malaysia, but teaching profession didn't bring me a good financial satisfaction. So I had to change my career and I went into marketing. And that was a brilliant experience that I had. That was the time I actually had an opportunity to work people from all over the world. And then maybe that's how I ended up with what I'm doing now, I guess.
Yeah, and Southeast Asia is a great place for that. Like, a lot of people from all over the world work in that band of countries, which I think you get opportunities there that you don't get elsewhere.
Yeah, exactly.
How did you get into cultural competency training?
I moved to Perth in end of 2006. And then I thought, okay, I want to work. And I thought, okay, this is going to be my last occupation. So I wanted to do something that I was really interested in. And when I thought about it carefully, the experience that I had working with people from other cultures and how I enjoyed and how I made mistakes and how I was terrible, that came to my thought. And I thought, oh, maybe I can share my experience and the learning so that the people can enjoy more working with people with a different background. And then maybe they don't have to take years and years like how I did to make the process a bit easier and faster too. So that's how I thought, okay, I'd like to do this work. And it has been, yeah, great. It's been...
Can you tell the story of how you started your business?
I actually wanted to be employed by someone.
Okay.
So I looked for a company that provides this type of service, intercultural consultancy or, you know, training. But there wasn't any I could find in Western Australia. That time I found one or two maybe in Eastern States. Then I thought, okay, what am I going to do? And so I thought I was brave enough to think I'll do this by myself. And then, surprise, surprise, there was no customer, no client. I found nobody who was interested in or who wanted to invest in this kind of workshop or training. And it was quite sad time. But then I really believed in this, and I believed that Australia needed this type of workshop. And I also believed that intercultural studies was started in Europe and US in 1960. That was the time it was very active, and then they started. And the thing is, I thought, oh, Australia doesn't need to repeat the history of interculturally struggling like US or in Europe. Yeah. We can start, you know, we have an advantage. Study is already done. Then we can just take the good part. Yeah. So I actually believed that this kind of training will be in need. So I persisted. And then I was very fortunate. I was very blessed that I came across with one lady who introduced me to one of the oil and gas company. And that's how I found my first business. And then from there on, yes, it has been hard to convince people, to, especially in corporate sector, it is quite challenging to let leaders to see where is the return of investment. That is the hard part to convince. But I think this kind of thing takes time.
Why did you choose the Intercultural Readiness Check program?
It's a good
which we'll
question.
Be using for the CMECU
yes,
program.
The assessment tool that we will be using is Intercultural Readiness Check. And this, I came across with this in 2013, and I found it's really good, fascinating. Because since 1960, intercultural studies has developed, but a lot of training or assessment tools are based on culture-specific. When I say culture-specific, that means they assess our competency against other cultures. So, you know, how I'm performing with Japanese culture or Australian culture or American culture, Germany or whatever. Very culture specific. But what intercultural readiness check is not so much of one particular culture, but how competent or how ready we are to deal with cultural diversity. So, and then anyway, nowadays, like, so globalized, and especially in multicultural country like in Australia, when you go to a meeting, you don't only have Japanese or Africans, you have all sorts of people, very culturally diverse. So to me personally, just learning about one culture is no longer good enough. We have to have competence to deal with multiple cultures at the same time.
Especially in a country like Australia, I feel like it's almost one of the core competencies that you need in order to work anywhere.
Yeah.
just in this organization, I think we're from at least 5 or 6 different backgrounds.
Yeah, that's right, so exactly.
You can't just deal with one.
Yeah, that's right. And then also, like, culture specific. I always think, like, the knowledge. You know, we have the head and the heart and the body. And the knowledge, that I learn a lot about African culture or whatever the culture is, I learn. It remains with me as a knowledge. But whether I can put it into my action and how to put it into my action to deal with that particular culture and how I feel about it is, again, totally different things. So this intercultural readiness check, short form IRC, actually tests our capability of how we ourselves are dealing with those different cultures. So it's good.
Why do you think it's so important to have these 4 different competencies? Maybe you can talk about what they are.
There are 4 competencies. One is intercultural sensitivity, which is the awareness and how sensitive we are towards other cultures, and then whether we are paying attention to little signals, you know, facial expressions, the tones, how much attention we are paying to those. The next one is intercultural communication. Okay, after we notice something, communication is the one that whether we are making an effort to change our approach in communication, how we communicate. And also active listening is part of it. Are we paying enough attention listening? And then the third one is building commitment. Building commitment is willingness to connect with someone who is totally different from your own culture. And then the lastly, it's uncertainty, managing uncertainty. This is the right competence to test in this COVID-19
I think
situation. Yeah, this is how comfortable we can remain with the uncertainty around us. So you walk into the room full of unknown cultures, and then whether we can still remain comfortable and manage the situation. That's the competence. Those are the 4 competences.
So from what you've seen in your training so far, what are people's reactions after? Well, I know that's a big question because you can get, but just maybe a range of reactions that you get once people have done this readiness check.
Yeah.
What do you find? What do they say to you?
You know, culture is something so intangible. It's so fluffy, and then you can't really get hold of it. So these 4 competencies actually give a very good direction to people what to do about their performance development in cultural diversity competence, what to do. So it's a clear direction that gives to
so
develop further.
Who developed this IRC?
IRC was developed by Dr. Ursula Brinkman and Oscar... I can hardly pronounce this name. Wes Wensdenberg. It is a difficult Dutch name. Yeah, 2 of them developed this tool in the Netherlands. And it's been around, I think, almost about 30 years.
From what I've heard is you can get really good statistics, like globally, because lots of people in different countries are doing it.
Yes.
I think that's a good tracking model to be like, how am I performing?
That's right. Because their data has grown up to 70,000. So 70,000 people have already taken this assessment. And your profile, your answers are compared to 70,000 people.
Wow.
And it is a very valid, reliable assessment tool which was tested through psychological, you know, the testing.
I've done my one now, and it's confronting doing it, because I grew up in Africa, lived in Southeast Asia, now I've lived in Australia as well. And you kind of think, even just within South Africa, you have to deal with 11 official languages. Mm-hmm. There's people from different tribes. And I kind of thought, oh, well, I should do okay. But you do feel a bit nervous before you do it, because you just don't know. And I think one of the things I was so aware of was that you don't make assumptions But it was really great to see the outcome of that and just feel like, well, here's direction for me. Like, I can still improve in this place or in that aspect. Yeah. Is that the kind of feedback that you're getting from other people as well?
Yeah, it makes it clear. It just makes everything clear and what to do. And also, the result comes with suggestions for improvement. And that's an advantage that a profile has. And it's just basically, it makes that development process much clearer, not just dealing with this fluffy culture stuff.
Yeah. Maybe for leaders in organizations, it must be quite a challenging time in the world that when you have to lead people and you have to develop them and develop their competencies, and they're from a range of different backgrounds, that it can be quite tricky to do that. And well, I think this program sounds like it could just be the thing that people, it could help them out.
I think so. It's always good to see that where your strengths are and where is your weaknesses are. And then it's not that you have to develop all four competences. It's almost like, you know, knowing where is the strengths, where my strengths is.
Yeah.
And then where is the weaknesses? And then once we know, I mean, we are all professionals, so we know, okay, I can use my strengths to do this or to do that. So actually, like, team readiness, in that sense, it works really brilliantly as well, this profile, because some people may be really good at intercultural sensitivities and notice things around, but some people may not be. But working in a team, they can actually work together and complement each other.
Yeah, because maybe somebody else's commitment is much higher than the sensitivity side. So what can people expect from the CMECU program?
Fun!
Yeah, I think like sometimes people make it so serious.
I know. This is the responsiveness program, and the responsiveness is all about actually connecting with people who are different, and we can't connect with people when we don't enjoy.
Exactly.
So cultural diversity and inclusion trainings and workshops became so serious in recent years that people actually hesitate and be scared of that training even. But then it should not be that way, because it is all about responsiveness, is all about connecting with people and enjoying the connection and performing together. So our workshop is aimed at having fun together while we are exploring how we can do better than what we are doing now.
I don't know about you, but when I arrived here, one of the things I found tricky was the humor, because it's so different.
Yeah.
People would be laughing and I go, I don't find that funny. Like, it's not funny. Uh-oh. And then, especially if you speak another language, then somebody tells you a joke, you can't tell that. You can't translate that into English. And I would assume, like, going from like Japanese culture into English, it's the same type of thing. So it's nice if there are ways to have fun and, you know, enjoy the time together.
Yeah, that's right. While you are learning.
While you're learning. But normally I finish the show with the same two questions.
Yeah.
And I'll do the same with you. Which word or phrase in Japanese did you bring with you to Australia and you hold on to it after you arrived?
The Japanese word that I have in mind is shizukesa.
Shizukesa.
So shizukesa means, shizukesa is the calmness, it's the quietness. The thing is, when I was young especially, I was a type of person like go, 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 go.
Yes.
Yes. But this word, like calmness, quietness, and I'm finding it so important, because when I am so busy with one thing from one to another, I actually do not have time to think or be aware of anything happening around me. So bringing in that calmness and quietness, that particular moment, those are the moments that I actually, good ideas come up and I can properly think things out. it's shizukesa.
And especially in this time in the world, I think that's what we need, you know, even if you feel like, oh, this life can be so overwhelming, if you can get a bit of shizukesa in your life,
yeah,
you'll do much better.
I know.
I think.
And then back in Japan these days, I've noticed that Japan is a quite unique, interesting country because it's the mixture of tradition and the modern technologies, everything in one place. But what I found is that you are walking in this busy, noisy street, and then once you go off one street, there is one spot which is just so quiet. It's just the silence is treated with respect.
Wow.
And that contrast, so you are in a busy place and then you suddenly step into this silence, and then your mind starts to clear and you have that clarity in that quietness, calmness, and it's really nice.
Oh, wow. Mm. I think we should do that as an exercise, maybe.
Maybe, yes.
Maybe that would be good. Which Australian phrase or word did you adopt? We were like...
No worries.
Snap. That's my one as well.
No worries. But because we do make mistakes, and then of course we are human beings, we make mistakes. Naturally we make mistakes. But I mean, we have to persist doing things in what we believe in. And so no worries. And keep on doing. And keep on persist. So no worries, no worries.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for your time. I've had so much fun just talking to you about all of this. And all the best with See Me, See You. That starts
Thank you very much.
26th of August.
Yeah, I'm so excited to meet the first group of participants.
So if you haven't signed up yet, go to our Eventbrite page and just there's plenty of spots left for the rest of the year. The first two sessions are booked out, but booking for the rest.
Good. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to meeting all the participants.
Excellent.
Thank you very much.
Goodbye.